Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White's ready to roll. He's got his New York Yankees hat on. I would have thought he might have been a Boston man, but apparently it's New York. Good morning to you, Whitey.
Good morning. I am a Boston man.
Well, then hang on. What's going on?
And they just clean swept New York over the last few days, too, in a series 4-0.
Is this an act of insult? Is it just wear the loser's hat?
No, it is. How can I put it? Emma's trying to get rid of my hats, and it's been incrementally done over a period of time.
How many hats? What sort of ballpark are we talking?
30, 40 sort of range.
Too many. Yep.
She believes that teenagers and early 20s people wear hats, and that I'm now an adult and shouldn't be wearing hats.
I'm in all sorts of.
So it has been sort of pared back a little bit, but this is the way. I'm not sure if you know, last year I went to New York.
Did you?
Mm. As part of, I went to a number of other countries as well.
Were we aware of this?
And I did go to Yankee Stadium to see New York play Houston.
No.
Why would you go there?
Championship match.
You support Boston. Why would you do that?
You went to
Boston were knocked out when I was there.
You went to games in America.
Yeah, I did.
Adam Romanowskis, welcome to you, by the way.
Good morning. I can't believe this.
I've got a question for you, both of you.
Yes.
Robbie Gray, you were just talking about the fact he won 2 medals.
Yes.
Who was the last player to win both showdown medals in the 1 year?
Josh Franco.
Josh Franco, that's a good name.
Good work.
Is that right?
Well, it is right.
He's a good player, Josh Franco.
He's a gun.
I'm just trying to get a couple of minutes out of that, but anyway.
That's what happens when you play with the big dogs, mate. That's what happens. Now, I do laugh a little bit about these medals that go for best on grounds in home and away games. They make me laugh a little bit. I'm not sure they should be going on your record later on.
Why?
Because, mate, you play well in a home and away game.
You're just jealous that your club
I would have had 15 of them.
Here we go.
In 1 year.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, Rama, that Daniel was referred to in an article yesterday as a Hawthorn great.
Great.
You seem to be... Is that a questioning of that statement?
No. That's just what it was.
Well,
we're validating
it. It's hard to argue with the truth.
Well,
women's AFL women's mentor or you know, coach? Well, it was Hawthorn great.
Were your high moments climbing a goalpost, staring into the distance with the number 5 Guernsey over the shoulder? Being oiled up on the footy show, doing a sort of the AFL review.
Never oiled up on the footy show.
What were the highs of the Hawthorn
never
career?
Never oiled up on the footy show. Never was I oiled. I refused to be oiled.
I think we may be able to find footage.
I was glossy enough.
Yeah.
I was glossy enough. I didn't require oiling for glossiness.
Very good.
You know what I'm doing today? I'm playing my 112th golf course in Victoria.
Here it is. That's been a while since we've had a chat about the list.
A new one.
Where are we today?
Kyneton.
Oh, Royal Kyneton. Lovely place. Yes, I've played there a couple of times with Big Nathan Thompson.
Is there any other reason to be up there?
A good friend of mine, Rob Waters, is that you know, Rob?
Yes.
Channel 10.
Yes.
The Prez. Is he still the Prez?
I'm going to play with him because he lives up there.
Oh, beautiful.
Isn't he the president of the footy club?
He was.
Footy netball club?
He was. He is no longer.
Beat the rain before the weekend.
Well, the course was closed yesterday, so there was a bit of an issue because, of course, we were talking to Sam Hyland yesterday about the amount of rain that happened up there, but we're going to go up there and see whether it's open.
Have you got your screw-ins? You're going to need your screw-ins to keep your feet.
Nah, just wear the runners.
You've got to get some golf shoes, by the way. I can't take you to decent courses wearing those stupid bloody runners.
That's the entertainment of it all.
No.
Slip and slide around the greens and the tee boxes.
No, it's not. No, he needs
and
golf
then
shoes.
By the whole 8, his socks are drenched and he's miserable.
The more people get upset by the fact that I'm wearing runners, the more I wear them.
That's right.
Well, the less golf you'll be invited to. That's the way it's going to work. That's okay if you're prepared to play less golf.
We need to mention Billy Slater.
Absolutely, we need to mention Billy Slater.
Because I think that's one of the all-time great careers. But to do it in Melbourne and to be recognised in Melbourne the way Billy is, I think is an absolute phenomenal effort. Obviously, Melbourne, Victoria is an AFL state, but I think Billy Slater and Cam Smith, obviously, and Cooper Cronk have made, they've definitely put rugby league on the map here in this state.
No doubt about that. He's been an absolute icon of the game. And the fact that we've been blessed to have him in Melbourne as part of our world has done wonders for the competition, for the entire NRL, and its interest across, I reckon, across the country. Had he played at Manly or Souths or wherever, West, it would have been good for New South Wales, but not necessarily good for the rest of the country. Because, but the fact he's a Queenslander, and so dominates Origin as well and has done for 15 years. So you've got the whole of Queensland that love him, New South Wales respect him, and then you've got the whole of Melbourne and Victoria that just idolise him because of what he's been able to do. So it's the possibly the best outcome ever for the NRL.
And you couldn't get a better citizen. In terms of the way he went about the game, the way he went about his off-field efforts, we've been so lucky. We've been so, so lucky. And Melbourne Storm, I think, have been so lucky to have Billy. And we still get, hopefully, what is there, another 7 or 8 weeks of the season, including finals, to watch him play.
And the last three of the last four games are at home too at Amy Park.
So get out there and get out there and have a look at him.
So Storm, and you should, if you haven't done it, make an effort, because not only is it Billy Slater, an icon and a future immortal of the competition, but watching rugby league at Amy Park is an outstanding experience.
It's touching distance.
Yeah, it's an outstanding sporting experience. If you've never done it, you should do it if you love your sport.
And just the final one for me on Billy. A few years back, and I know Whitey would have watched this on a Sunday afternoon, they had like Australia's greatest athlete, and Billy won that competition a couple of times.
Thanks
to show.
To Rexana?
Yes. Just to show how much of an athlete he, because we think of rugby league players as these big type of blokes, but he was a phenomenal athlete.
Nah, absolutely.
We're going to miss him, absolutely. The challenge is for the Melbourne Storm. Like, Cam Smith's not going to go on for too much longer. Maybe one more.
Yep.
Billy Gonski at the end of this year. Mm-hmm. You lose Cooper. Craig Bellamy's gone through till 2022, maybe. 2022. What happens after that?
Yeah, go and find.
Isn't that a great challenge for the Melbourne Storm to continue to have such a presence in the marketplace down here with their athletes and with the sport? Now, we know Cam Munster's he's a star.
Yep.
But is he... does he carry himself publicly like Billy Slater?
Right.
Do we have
the challenge.
That profile, that presence from a media perspective? Mm. Do they stay relevant in the grand scheme of things up against the AFL monster that it is? Mm. It's a big challenge for the Melbourne Storm in the next 5 years, I reckon, to find that next generation of front men, so to speak, to carry it through.
I agree, and I think that is no doubt something that they are thinking about and how they do that. So there's got to be no right or wrong, and you can't replace those guys. They're once in lifetime players, but all three of them happened to play together, which was quite remarkable. But what the Melbourne Storm have done really well, they've always embraced AFL. They've never thought we're competing against AFL. They've embraced it. Those three guys that I spoke of have all embraced the AFL as well. Like you see Cam Smith at Hawthorn games all the time. I think last year Whitey, he was forming a guard of honour with his son when Hawthorn were running out on the ground. So, you know, it is a great challenge. I think they ticked over 25,000 members of Storm. So, they'll find them. They're that type of club. Mm. They'll find the next superstar.
Before we go to Larry, Daniel, watch the reaction here from Rammer. Did you know that Billy Slater almost played at Essendon?
Yes, I did. Absolutely, I did.
Can't get it.
Whoa.
Absolutely, I did.
How close was it?
Very.
What do you mean? Are you talking about?
There was trials. There was absolutely
Was this the Greg Inglis trials situation? Because he was supposed to have done a bit of this trial activity, wasn't he?
Yep.
What? You couldn't find any AFL players? Is that what happened at Essendon?
Sometimes you've got to think outside the box.
If you're not quite comfortable in your development systems, you probably go out there, I suppose.
Melbourne Storm spoke to one of my guys a couple of years ago that I manage.
Big Ben Brown?
No.
Cyril?
Nope.
Got to talk to him about Cyril.
Who else we got? Before we worry about that stuff, Larry is in Yarram. He's been waiting on the line for a little while. Good morning, Larry.
Yeah, good morning, boys. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, I wanted to echo how refreshing it was to hear yourself and Whitey take Steve O to task yesterday over the handling of this situation over in West Australia and the follow-up court case, the case here and everything. But I'll take you back 2.5 weeks ago when Bernie Vince and Patrick Dangerfield chatted after a match. The camera zoned in on that particular conversation, and Dermot Brereton, Robbo, Damien Barrett, Jonathan Brown, Matthew Lloyd, Shane Corns, Tony Jones absolutely lambasted Bernie Vince for his actions. On the Tuesday night, Gerard Whateley showed a photo to Robbo of Bernie Vince with his head in his hands 5 feet away from the Geelong players after that final siren bit down there. He hurt just as much as anyone else. And it really annoys me so much that the vultures that zone in on these things and question. Bernie Vince came to Melbourne when they had nobody, and he was a poster boy for them. He's done a terrific job. Jimmy Martel is one of the most refreshing people in the media. I hope you never lose him on this show, because he scales everything back to facts and he deals with it logically and systematically. And I just wish that the AFL, the Players Association and the media outlets get together and put a line in the sand that says enough is enough, because it's gone too far.
Good on you, Larry. Well played.
Did you play golf, Larry?
Oh, occasionally, just have a hit, mate, just for a bit of fun, yeah.
You want some golf balls?
That'd be sensational, mate, yeah. No reason. I didn't ring up to get a prize.
No.
You've been frustrated with what's been happening, and I think it's fantastic to hear blokes in the media standing up against some of the nonsense that's going on. And the punters that listen to your show and watch these other shows, we're not mugs. We've got an opinion and we know what's happening. We don't need stupid stuff rammed down our throat that's totally untrue.
I agree.
Couldn't agree more with you, Larry. Right. Doesn't Callaway Chrome Soft Golf Balls coming your way. They are the best ones, even when you're just hacking around. They are the best. Don't you worry about that. But yes,
there's journalists out there that love clickbait, Huff.
We just sensationalise and look for stuff that isn't there and then make it up.
I think that point
drives me bananas.
That point that Larry made about Bernie Vince and that photo.
Oh.
Like, come on, guys. Like, seriously, you don't think Bernie Vince is hurting after they lose a game, kick after a siren? Gee, give me a break.
I don't think Andrew, our producer at the back, is familiar with the town of Yarram.
No.
Just with the spelling there?
Yeah, no, not quite.
In brackets, in Gippsland.
No, he's not.
He wanted to give Larry a straight six burger. It'd be a long drive
to
get
a burger. It's a long drive for Larry, so we'll just give him the golf balls. The golf balls instead. Thank you, Larry, for your call. We agree with the sentiment of that, no doubt about it. Let's talk some cricket, because I think we all had a hell of a time watching the first test between England and India. Test 2 is just around the corner, and Andrew McGlashan from ESPN Quick Info has joined us to talk about that and a little bit more as well. G'day, Andrew.
Hi there, guys. How are you?
We're going very well, thank you. Can you tell us just initially the sentiment and the reaction from the public towards this series, particularly after the first test, but even leading into, was it one that was anticipated fairly highly?
I think it was to a degree. It's kind of slightly hard to judge the cricket mood over here at the moment. I mean, probably all aware of the various things that are going on in English cricket in terms of the structure, this new tournament that they're talking about. There's a lot of talk about how engaged people are with cricket over here at the moment, but certainly that result itself helped get people talking about the game again. It was a fantastic 3 days and a session. People were starting to compare it to the test match in 2005, the Ashes test match in 2005, which is probably still the greatest test match England have been involved in. This one probably nips into the top 10 in some people's rankings, the one that's just taken place. So it was certainly a good time for England to be involved in a close test match, and especially good time from their point of view to win one. It's been a pretty up and down period of test cricket for them over the last few years. Obviously some heavy defeats away from home, and their home form has been erratic over the last couple of seasons. So it was very important for them to get the first test under their belt, sort of settle a few nerves. They've got a reasonably new look side in some areas. So it was a crucial performance and a very encouraging one, really, to bowl an Indian side out when you're defending just 190, albeit even in home conditions, it's still a very fair effort. So there's plenty for England to be positive about after that game.
I think, Andrew, you make a good point. I'd like you to expand on a little bit about just the temperature in the room about where cricket is at the moment in England, because what a lot of people don't realise is that Test cricket's not on free-to-air television. So it's annoying people a little bit at the moment because they're trying to grow the game through these new 100 ball games and T20 cricket through terrestrial television in the UK, but test matches are sort of being left out of the equation.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think it's easy to perhaps get carried away with some of the negative talk coming out. I mean, there's a suggestion that the ECB aren't themselves doing quite as much as they could to promote their own product, which is probably another debate. But, I mean, cricket is still very healthy in this country. The crowd numbers at our domestic T20 are good. Crowd numbers when England are play are good, albeit Edgbaston wasn't sold out. The test match just finished. That was partly put down to it starting on a Wednesday. They normally start on a Thursday over here. The Lord's test, which starts tomorrow, that as usual is sold out. So test cricket is still reasonably healthy. But you're right, there's a massive debate going on about how many people can actually get eyeballs on it. So whereas that 2005 test I mentioned, that got a nation in front of their televisions, even if it was for just 2 or 3 hours to watch Flintoff try and get Brett Lee out, and then obviously Freddie consoled Lee. They became iconic images that went around the country. Now, the day after England won that test at Edgbaston, the players were on the front and back page of the newspapers. It's still there when England win. There is still that interest, but it's not quite front and centre of the public. We've just, obviously, around the world, there's just been very successful Football World Cup this year, obviously more successful for some countries than others. But over here, because England had a good tournament, reached the semis, you sense that vibe of the nation getting behind the team. And of course, the Football World Cup was on free-to-air over here. So there's a sense of people going down even in their living rooms or going down the pub and watching, or just going to go with mates and watching it. Not quite sure where that still exists for cricket. Maybe it never did quite exist in the same way as football, but it's certainly a big debate over here. And to put it bluntly, there's no test cricket is not going back onto free-to-air in terms of live anytime soon. I'd be surprised if it ever does. There are still highlights on free-to-air, but of course that's just 45 minutes every night, which for a test match like Edgbaston doesn't feel quite enough.
Nice to have Sean Greig back with us on the Inner Sanctum on a Thursday morning. Morning to you, Sean.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you back, mate.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I enjoy this time of the day, and I like the jumper Whitey's got there.
What's he running with?
New England Patriots. Mm. Big NFL fan I am. So,
oh, yeah. Who's your team?
Pittsburgh. Yeah, oh, Big Ben. I like Big Ben.
Big Ben Roethlisberger.
Antonio Brown or Le'Veon Bell.
Mm. Is he still wearing the beard, Ben, these days?
Oh, he mixes it up. I think they're in the training camp at the moment, but I don't think the big fella would be doing too much.
So what's the appetite for US sport? We talked about US sport before. In the footy rooms there at Richmond, is everyone into it? Baseball, football, whatever?
NFL's big. We've got a fantasy competition that's been running for about 5 or 6 years that all the boys get into. And there's two leagues. There's that much participation.
Is that right?
Sort of relegation promotion?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, so that's always good fun. So it's coming up to sort of draft time in the lead up. So we'll put our hats on and have the draft.
Have you been to much live sport overseas?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit of the NFL, which a couple of times we've been over there for training camps and been lucky enough to do that. And we also had Cam Newton, the quarterback for Carolina, come out and train with us for about 2 weeks, and he ended up winning the MVP that year too.
Mm. We talk often about other sports and how they get integrated into our sports, and soccer, there's a lot of soccer around, you know, the formations and things like that, particularly behind the ball. Do you see any advantages in what you know of NFL bringing that into AFL?
Oh, I'd love to bring in like the locker room banter and how much they get paid. That'd be all right if we could bring that into AFL. I suppose tactics, and I love how, you know, they have the set plays, and before the actual play happens, they know what's going to go on. So sometimes we can have similar little things like that.
Because it's interesting, I think, around the forwards and their, you know, if you look at the wide receivers, you know, the hook leads and things like that. Because I think that has kind of come into our game a little bit, with the forward set a little higher as opposed to just coming out of the goal square. That I think Favola was one that looked at that quite a lot. I think Jack thinks a bit like that, with the way he leads, a 2 or 3 lead sort of formation things.
Yeah, no doubt. Do you take... do you look at other athletes, how they go about their training regime and all that? Do you try to implement that anyway into your training?
Yeah, I always keep a keen eye out, and it was good to see Cam Newton when he trained with us. He's a beast of an athlete, you know, sort of probably 6'5" and, you know, over 100 kilos, and lightning fast and good in the gym, and he was pretty good with the footy too. He could kick it all right.
Is there cash on the line? I'm going back to the fantasy leagues. Is there cash on the line?
Yeah, there might be a little wager. Might be a little wager.
A couple of Spud Bar vouchers.
Wow, couldn't go wrong with a Spud Bar voucher.
We would like to set up a league here, but you'd be too busy. Not enough time.
I've got no interest.
Hours in the day.
I've got no interest in fantasy leagues. I just can't get my head around it. It's just not my thing. I'll tell you what is my thing, though. Footy and Richmond are my thing. I love the Tigers. Close shave on Friday night. What was the wash-up? What was sort of the feedback? Because you had the game in control for most of it. There were patches where Geelong had, you know, had control, maybe for 10 minutes here and there, but you really owned the game. What was the sort of discussion afterwards?
Yeah, that's what happens with good teams. We knew they were going to come and sort of wrestle the momentum for some parts of the game. And, to their credit, they played really well. It was a little bit of a different look than what we faced earlier in the year against Geelong. We only played them probably 7 or 8 weeks ago. And the sort of difference that I found personally was I thought they played like they would if they were playing at their home ground. The ground's a lot skinnier. It felt like they played through the middle a bit more and they didn't want to really go wide and sort of get lost at the MCG, which to their credit, worked for them.
So how do you review the last sort of 6 minutes of that game? Obviously, that's when they kicked a couple of goals. And was there lapses in your guys' concentration from a defensive point of view, or was it your when you had the ball in your hands?
Yeah, we didn't really have the ball in our hands too much. That was probably half the battle. It's just in the game of AFL, it's so hard to stop momentum. That's what probably separates the teams up the top and down the bottom is you can wrestle the momentum back. And Geelong are a really good team and they've got some great players, offensive players, and once they got on a roll, they were hard to stop.
So why do we see teams at the end of games when they're trailing by 3 or 4 goals? be able to push
emotional.
I am a little bit emotional because I picked Geelong, but we won't talk about that until tomorrow.
Oh, you've coughed up a lead,
yes,
too.
Yes, I have. I know.
It's
I know.
Great.
Yeah, don't laugh. It's not, yeah. But why do we see teams be able to kick 3 and 4 goals late in games really, really quickly when they're pushing really, really hard? What changes in your game style? Is it just high risk and go for it?
Yeah, I think there's probably an element to that where you play the high risk, high reward, where if it gets through and it works, you can score quickly. But if you turn it over and it doesn't work, then you can get scored against. So it's always that, the wrestle of if you've got the lead, do you try and hang on to it? Or in the past, that's probably hurt us. Last year, we learnt the lessons of those 4 close games we lost by under a kick because we probably went to save the game too early. And, or on the other hand, do you keep playing how you're playing and try and kick another one or two and really put the game to bed?
Just based on what you were saying before about Geelong doing something a little different to what you expected, have you found that this year, that clubs are doing different things to try and break down the premiership team or have to come up with different ways of playing because it hasn't worked previously?
Yeah, we've noticed teams have tried some stuff against us, which has been good because we've had to sort of change some things on the fly and adjust during the game, which has been a great challenge for us. So, it's always a challenge. Every week is a sort of different set of challenges from different teams. So it keeps it pretty exciting.
Is it a bit of a bonus coming into a finals campaign when you might come up against a team like Geelong and having seen them play that hand already? So you've got that on file to be able to rectify and deal with if they do it again?
Yeah, it is probably good to see it now, but also on the flip side of that, most teams, you generally know what most teams are going to try and do week to week. It's just some teams are so good it's hard to stop.
Yep.
But it's probably good to get a look at it now. But, on the flip side of it, if they play well again and get the momentum going, they're going to be hard to stop even though that we probably know what we're going to be facing.
Are you guys playing well?
Yeah, we are. We've played some good footy. We've had a couple of really red-hot games the last couple of weeks. With the Pies, they really threw everything at us, and that was a tough game, and Geelong as well. But, we've been working on a couple of things and tinkering with a couple of things. So hopefully, just like last year, our best footy's in front of us still.
The clearances. You're right down on the list of clearances if you match up with everyone else in the competition. Is that just an anomaly, or is it something that you don't necessarily focus as much on as some of the other teams? Because I think it's an interesting stat. What are you shaking your head at?
Well, they're the highest scoring team from turnover.
Yeah.
Well, so there's method.
Yeah, I want to explain that, sort of dig into that a little bit deeper.
Well, I don't think we want to go in losing the stoppages. we want to try and win and get the game going our way and play in our forward half. But, if it's sort of like every team. If we do happen to lose a stoppage, we want it to make it hard for them, you know, whether it's a quick kick out or, you know, a lot of pressure around the ball to give our backs a chance. We have some elite defenders who are great at winning the ball back. So if we do lose the stoppage, us midfielders want to put, you know, pressure on the ball to make it easier for them.
Geelong was a bit like that, weren't they, when they were in that really successful era, that the statistics weren't really backing up how well they were going from a clearance point of view, because they get off turnover and away they go.
I think Hawthorn might have been a bit similar too throughout their three-peat as well, that their clearance numbers, they were 17th or 18th in clearances, I think.
Hold your back six and outnumber, and then that's where you start your scoring chain from.
It's, yeah, get your shape. And then, and as Sean says, it's a really good point that you're happy to lose it if it's dirty ball coming out. Like if it's not clean ball breaking through the front or laterally from the contest and the player with the ball's got time and space, if it's hack forward, then you can defend that.
Yeah.
But if you let it come out easily, then that's when the challenges arise in terms of your clearance numbers. So you don't actually need to win it, but you just got to make sure if it is coming out, it's coming out nice and dirty.
So for the people that are listening, can you explain a few different scenarios as to why that's the case? Like, so if Richmond's got an extra number behind the ball, where the opposition's player is he behind the ball at the other end or is he in the contest? Like, because I think it's interesting to explore how it is that Richmond always seem to have more players on the field than the opposition, because it often looks like that.
Richmond are unbelievable at the moment at outnumbering. So that's what I was going to ask Grigor. What he speaks about the clearance loss is then the most important part after that clearance loss is where the midfielders end up from spread.
Yeah, it is. You know, we've got some guys that have incredible work rates. You know, Kane Lambert is an animal. Dion Prestia, when he's been playing, missed last week, really works hard. And yeah, we pride ourselves on, you know, an even mix in that midfield who are hard-working blue-collar type players.
Are you a blue or a white?
A blue or white, what?
Collar.
No, blue.
Blue. Definitely blue. Straight to blue.
Definitely blue.
You don't want to be known as a white-collar player, do you? You don't want that tag. You want to be blue.
Yeah, I don't think we have any, really.
No, that's why you're a good team. Tell me more about Kane Lambert. I don't know much about Kane Lambert, apart from what I see on television with his football. He must be a very, very determined character, Kane Lambert.
Definitely is. Yeah, he's missed a lot of drafts and never really gave up. Dominated the VFL competition for four or so years, I think.
Yeah, a long time.
I think the tipping point was he had about 40 touches and kicked four goals in a prelim for Williamstown. And fortunately for us, we picked him up in the rookie draft, and it's no real surprise when he got his chance to be on a list how he's progressed, because his work rate is huge. He doesn't leave any stone unturned. He trains really hard, and he's just a really good team player for us.
As guys through the years that have come in on the back of like rookie drafts and missed a few drafts and that type of thing, and that they would get to the club and they'd be these training animals and they compete as hard as anyone in the one-on-one stuff. Other guys, the number one draft picks or the first round, second round draft picks that have had a nice passage through seem to just sort of float through a bit, from my experience anyway. Is he like a real dog, one-on-one, he's coming for you?
Yeah, he's got some incredible strengths. Like, his work rate is huge. The way he can just keep running is a real asset for us. And the more footy he's played, the more confident he's become with the ball in his hand. And he's been really damaging the last couple of years for us.
Do you reckon the opposition teams are paying him more respect now?
I think so, yeah. I think they're probably more aware of what he's capable of. But, you know, that's probably the beauty about our team. We're pretty even and we don't rely on one or two players to get us over the line.
What about your training block at the moment? Obviously, you've probably known you're playing finals now for a few weeks. Have you gone into a hard training block to really prepare yourself for finals? Have you noticed there's been the tempo has picked up or the quantity of training has picked up?
It's been a little bit different because we've gone from the last couple of weeks, we've had a 6-day break, 8-day break, 6-day break coming up. So every week is a bit different. And the season is so long, it's hard to really, you know, really ramp up training. We train pretty hard every week, to be honest. And our fitness staff and physios and doctors over the last couple of years have got a great record with keeping players out on the park. So, yeah, we'll trust them. And, when they tell us to get some work in, we get some work in. When they tell us to rest and recover, we do.
So is that luck, that getting players on the park, or is that preparation, do you reckon? Because a lot of clubs are having huge issues with injuries this year.
I think it is a bit of both. Maybe if you get through 6 months or a year with hardly any injuries, you might say, oh, we've had a bit of luck. But for us, it's been over sort of 2 years now.
Yeah,
so absolutely. It probably isn't. We've got a great team of staff down there. Anthony Shackey, our head physio, is unbelievable. He's been there for years and years and doesn't get the recognition he deserves. But Peter Burge as well, our high performance manager, and Luke Meehan, who's in charge of our weights, they're all working in a great team.
We hear so many clubs of players when they train, they're on, you know, reduced time limits and the like. But I continue to hear out of Richmond, majority of the players do 100% of the session every single week. Is that true?
Yeah, every player is looked after and respected what they need to do. That's for sure. But the beauty about our club is we rock up to training every day, and training's so fun. Everyone wants to train. Everyone
wants to lose your spot.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone wants to be out there and you know, enjoying training, because we really do enjoy what we do. We work really hard on our game, but we have fun doing it.
Does it feel the same as it did last year? Because obviously you've now got that template of success of what you're able to achieve last year. You're sort of 3 or 4 weeks out from the final series. Does it feel the same? Does it have to feel different because you've got a different set of challenges? Are the confidence levels there? What's the feeling around the camp about like?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit different. As last year we were, we had our sights set on the top four, and we were outside the top four, I think, maybe this time last year, and we needed to win, you know, most every game, and we were sort of looking at other results to go our way, whereas this year it's sort of in our control. We're in the top two at the moment, and you know, if we keep winning, we're going to stay there. So that's nice to know that it's on you, not relying on any other games.
Does it make you more relaxed that you don't, you can just, I mean, how much of an advantage is that you just can, you can actually control the circumstances from here?
Yeah, it just removes probably that other anxiety that you're worrying about other results, which we're not. We're just focused on us. And like I said, if we keep winning, then we're going to finish in the top two.
Because you had the similar situation, Rama, at Essendon, about that whole thing of sitting high up, knowing you're the best team, 3-4 weeks out from the final series. Do you have to guard against complacency, or are you so well drilled that that's okay?
You do, but also at the same time, there's a fear that you may lose your spot, particularly for guys from about position 16 in the team. There's a real fear factor in, geez, I don't want to miss out on this. So the complacency side of that is really out, probably on the training track more than the game. I think once you get to the game, everybody's competitive. They want to play, but the complacency can come on the training track. As Greg is talking about here, if you've not completely switched on, it's very difficult.
Geez, you must have had a lot of injuries for you to get a game. Sean Greg has joined us in the inner sanctum of the Tigers. They've got the Gold Coast this week, Saturday at Metricon. What's your record like at Metricon?
Not great, I don't think. I think we've played them 7 times and beaten Gold Coast 4, and they've beaten us 3.
A couple of in Cairns.
Yeah, in Cairns, yeah.
Oh, yes, right.
So, the Carmichael Hunt game.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't reckon Brendan Gale will sell those games again.
I don't think you need to when you've got 100,000 members fighting around.
No. That's right.
Albeit you're playing Gold Coast this week, your interstate record has been poor. You haven't won interstate this year. Anything changed this week, or business as usual? Are you trying something different?
Yeah, it has been not great this year. We haven't won yet. In the past, we've had a pretty good interstate record. So that's one thing that we're really focused on this week, is to rectify that. And, you know, we've got to go up there with a good mindset, because we saw a couple of weeks ago Gold Coast knocked over the Swans. And when they play good footy, you know, they're going to be hard to beat. So we've got a couple of reasons to go up there and knock off that interstate record.
So do travel plans change in any way? Are you going to train on Metricon day before the game, or do something different?
Yeah, we always do that. We're flying up Friday tomorrow, and having a run around up there, and we play during the day, which is nice, and nice fly straight back. So yeah, we're looking forward to getting away together. Yeah, straight back after the game.
Cool.
Because we've got a 6-day break leading into the Bombers, so we'll get up there and try and rectify this interstate record this year.
So is it discussed this week from the Damien Hardwick bring it up, the record?
Well, he hasn't yet. We've got our main training.
He will.
We've got our main training today, so we'll have a look at the Gold Coast then. But it's something that we want to put to bed, and we want to win interstate.
We've asked this question a bit to our players that come in here about that main training session, what it's like. So, what time does it start today for you?
I'll head in straight after this, and we'll have a meeting on the Gold Coast, sort of 8:30-ish, and then we're into our main session.
And so, would you like? strap your ankles, do all that sort of stuff like you were playing, or is it different to the way you prepare?
No, I strap my ankles. A lot of guys do and prepare sort of like it's a game. It's boys shaking their heads over here. Ramo, no.
I never strap my ankles. That's shocking.
Lucky. We go at it. We'll be out there for a couple of hours and training's pretty full on.
So when you come off the field, are you not as tired as you would be after playing a game? But is there a significant recovery required after a training session? How intense is it? And you say you're out there for 2 hours. It's a long time.
Yeah, that's probably the balance that the fitness staff get paid for. It's getting enough work into the players but not tipping them over the edge. We want to be fresh come Saturday. That's our main event of the week. But we also want to get enough work in to improve and keep our legs ticking over. And we've also got, probably four guys coming back this week. Maybe Nathan Broad, Dion Prestia, and if Jack Graham and maybe Reece Conker get through training.
Reece Conker.
Also, Basha Hooley.
Pretty handy ins.
Played in the VFL as well. So they've got to get through training, but those guys... not too far away at all.
You Reece Conker, would be miraculous if he was to even play VFL this week.
He has been training pretty well. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, but maybe I'm jumping to conclusions. But he's looking pretty good on the track already.
So how long's he been running for?
A couple of weeks. Yeah, he's turned the corner pretty quick.
Hey, I just want to ask you about another player, Dylan Grimes. I don't think he gets enough credit. We're speaking to Ben Stratton later in the show, and I think those guys are very, very similar in terms of probably the regard they're held at within the football club, but they don't get the external praise that they probably deserve.
Yeah, Grimes, he's been fantastic. Last year, he won our Players Award that us players vote on from week to week, and so he's held in very high regard at our footy club, and he just gets the job done week in, week out. Got a nice little winery, Mount Macedon as well. So he's a real sort of country boy loves getting his hands dirty. And he's out there doing the vineyards and playing around with little bobcats and those sorts of things. He loves it.
So he doesn't live up there, does he?
He's up there quite a bit. He's also got an apartment in Richmond as well. So probably half and half. He loves it. And boys have been out there a couple of times. It's a great setup.
Nice wine.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he does well.
Well, when he dishes it out by the box, it's a delicious one when he's just feeding the players by the box.
Well, after a plug like this, surely something comes my way.
Surely there's a couple of dollars just coming your way. Couldn't be that hard. So you travel up tomorrow and you train at Metricon tomorrow or it'd have to be tomorrow, wouldn't it?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, we fly about midday, I think it is, and go straight to the ground and have a training session and then put the feet up and relax and get ready for the game.
Scotty Gullen.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to start off with asking Adam what he thought of the two-day national draft.
I'll ask that, Adam.
Which Adam?
Adam White.
Adam White.
I nearly drove off the road before because of that. That was outstanding.
Do you disagree?
No, I've been to a lot of drafts, and, they peter out after about 2 minutes. So they're going to do well to make it. Well, they have Gil, come out with the hats, the full-on NFL and the cuddle with Gil and
look,
cheering.
Well, they started that where Gil now comes up and gives the announcement of who the player is.
But they started getting legends at the club to hand it over.
That's in round two and beyond.
Do you remember the Seinfeld episode where George's mum was really excited because George was...
Not the amusement park.
No.
The Yankees.
George was going out with a woman by the name of, I think it was Donna Chang. And she was really excited about this because she thought she was Chinese. And then there was going to be all these sort of Chinese remedies that she could explore with Donna. And then she was mortified to find out that Donna was not, in fact, Chinese. And she actually said to Donna, "You know what? You're not Chinese." And I think this is a bit like this with
where are we going with this?
It's a bit like this with the AFL. You're not American. You're not the NFL.
Oh, okay.
You're the AFL. Don't try and be the NFL.
Glad we got there in the end. That was good.
why can't we try something different?
Well, you can try something different, but just don't mimic the Americans.
Just try. What would you suggest?
Not having a draft over 2 days? That's a good start.
What would you suggest? It's going to be on TV. What would you suggest, Whitey?
What would I suggest? I'll get back to you. Not the way it is.
Right. Okay. Okay, so we're not quite sure. But the live trading of drafts...
That's all very interesting.
That will be interesting because that requires a fair element of intelligence.
Yeah, so what that will be... So the live trading of draft picks from the end of trade period up until the draft. So that will be clubs getting as much intel as they possibly can on the draft and where players are potentially going to drop. Now, if a certain club thinks a certain player is going to drop before their pick, how do they move up towards that pick in the draft? So I think that's going to be fascinating. Look, the perfect example at the moment is Adelaide. And with there's four really good players out of Adelaide this year that will all potentially go in the first round of the draft. You know, how can Adelaide and Port Adelaide move up in the draft to have a shot at those guys?
And doing it during the draft will be the sexy bit. So if Adelaide's first pick is, like you said, six and the two South Australians haven't gone the top three, they do a deal with St Kilda on the night, that'll be quite exciting.
Yeah,
Need sirens and all that sort of stuff to go, we've had a trade. Ding, ding, ding. That's what they do.
There's
going
to need to be some sort of flaggage or...
Yeah.
To get referees.
Fire alarm.
It's got to be very interesting because people can make very, very poor decisions when they're emotional.
That's right.
On a particular player.
So what happens if they butcher it?
Well, that's right.
It's Carlton.
And the Blues will nail it. Because Sauce is there. Sauce has been... He's been planning for this all year, the Sauce man.
Wow.
He's all over this.
He's on fire.
He's been waiting for this moment to get the trade and draft night.
Look, the top 10 will be interesting, but 2 hours of interesting? I don't know. I don't know, Rama.
Well, maybe if you're sort of roaming the floor, interviewing people.
Like mums and dads.
Yeah,
mums.
That might make it a little bit more interesting.
Managers, it's all about you. You want to get your face on the TV.
Or we could go live with Adam White's tweets through the draft, which I sort of follow quite closely on the weekend.
Sri Lanka v Zimbabwe.
Trying to be a service watching. To you, Adam, just to help with your coverage over the weekend.
I read them.
I know.
I don't use them, but I do read them.
There's issues here, Daniel.
I think the short story is that 2 days is excessive.
Yes.
That's what the short story is. But you've got to try something. Good luck to you. Good luck to whoever's involved in the coverage and the 2-day draft extravaganza. Sean Higgins.
Yes.
On the back page of your paper, Eliza's Hall, Mark Robinson, telling me that he would like suspensions for people who punch.
Well, you know, his theory was the clampdown sort of was keyed in the right way about 18 months ago, and then it sort of become fines and the players just keep doing it because they'll cop their $1,500.
Mm.
And look, if anyone, every player's on notice. We saw what happened with Brayshaw. A swinging punch, your opponent can slip, bang, there's 6 to 8 weeks. So I think it will have an effect. There's no doubt. It has to be in the front of mind of the guys when they're wrestling, etc. But if you're getting tagged in the heat of the moment, we see the jump and punches, and it's I can't see it being outlawed, but if you start giving... Can you start doing it now? Can you change your complete focus? And Chris O start... So if blokes have got away with it all year, can you go round 22, 1 week for you? And they'd go, oh, hang on.
I don't think you can.
Yeah, you can't. So it's a next year job?
Yeah. It's an off-season reset.
It's right.
Expectations... And ramifications.
Take your video around during the preseason and go, see this? That's now 1 week.
Yeah. But what's one of the interesting parts of this whole debate, really, is what constitutes a reportable offence in that regard? Is a forearm to the back like it was... Who did that the other week to Brendan Goddard? Did that.
Well, then guys flop, so how do you know they're not flopping? Well,
so this is the question. That there's seems to be a sentiment that all that niggle, and Greg Williams was talking about it yesterday.
Yeah.
Needs to be taken out of the game. It's just unnecessary and garbage. And to a degree, I agree with them.
But the problem they've got is impact.
What constitutes...
Yeah. So a stomach punch, Rammer goes down, but Whitey doesn't, so he gets a week when his punch could have been... Do you know what I mean? So that's the grey area that's... Even if you punch a guy and he stands up and it's a light punch, you're going to get a week. Is that where we're going to have to get to?
Is an open hand the same as a clenched fist?
Open hand to the face, I think you're in trouble. Open hand to the body, probably not.
So there's going to be...
It's a grey area.
It's going to be out, that's what I'm saying.
So your man Chris would be very busy. He'd need 2 days.
This is a question, not a statement. Are we overreacting again to one incident that happens every, or maybe, you know, once a year at most? I mean, we really only had two of these incidents in the last 5 years. Are we overreacting because it's emotional and it's raw and all that sort of thing?
Yeah. I'm a bit in that camp.
Yeah, I think that's right. But there was this conversation about trying to eradicate the niggle, the unnecessary rubbish in footy.
Some of that's gamesmanship as well.
But we've been here where the umpires then tighten up on that interpretation and start paying free kicks, and everyone's outraged at how soft that free kick is. And, oh, you can't surely be giving a free kick for that, or you can't possibly be giving... I mean, we'll go back to that Tom Hawkins suspension. Everyone was outraged that Tom got given a suspension for hitting Phil Davis, and how can you be doing this?
That's such a soft punch.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, because of what happened with Gaff and Brayshaw, that all of a sudden we're swinging 180 degrees violently.
Sure, Ben Stratton's too worried about that, though. He's got some work to do this weekend. The Cats are coming to town to the mighty MCG, and that is always a wonderful clash. I'm sure he's looking forward to it. He joined us, the Hawks defender. Good morning, Ben.
G'day, guys.
Great to have you on, mate. You've had Essendon last week, which is a famous rivalry. Geelong this week, back-to-back. Is there an energy amongst the crew building up to a finals campaign, considering that there's a fair bit hanging on this game?
Yeah, it's nice to play a couple of games in a row at the G. It feels like we haven't played there in a while. We've been sort of away the last 6 to 8 weeks, so it's nice to be back at the home of footy. And I suppose we're just building and building each week, so... the young boys, it's nice for them to experience games like last weekend against Essendon. It was almost finals-like.
Do you reckon there's a reason why the games against Geelong are like they are? And you would have played in some unbelievable encounters through your career at Hawthorn in the last 10 years or so. Is there a reason why they're so tight and close?
Ever since I've been at the club, they have been tight. I think that's probably the modern-day rivalry. You talk about the Essendon one, but that probably stems back. That's a lot of history behind that. This one's definitely been going since I've been at the club. And I don't know, wherever the teams are, both teams are on the ladder, it always seems like a close one. So, I'm sure it'll be no different this weekend.
Hey, Strats, it's been probably a changing of the guard at Hawthorn now for a number of years. How much time have you spent with guys like Ryan Burton, Blake Hardwick, Taya Miles, James Sicily to a lesser extent, that have come into your defensive unit?
For sure. I mean, when I first got to the club, I was lucky enough to have blokes like Hodgie and Lakey when he came across. I had great defenders around me, even Stephen Gillam sort of back in the day. Virtual, blokes like that sort of nurtured me on the way through, and now it's sort of my turn to do that. And Birdo's a good one. He's sort of only new to the sort of defensive and backline type thing. So he's keen to keep learning and we got to keep teaching him those things, and as well as Sicily and those blokes. So Hardwick's a beauty as well. He's just goes hard at it no matter what. So he's pretty easy to teach as well.
And your own form, we've spoken about you a fair bit this year about how well you've been playing, and obviously you had an outstanding game against Essendon. You've had those injury concerns over the last couple of years. Where would you stack up this year's form compared to some of your other years?
Obviously last year myself and Frawley didn't play much footy at all, and I probably after 2015 or 16, I sort of had a couple of rough years where I didn't do too much at all. So it's nice just having the body right again and having a consistent back six or seven around us at the moment. That hasn't changed too much. And those blokes keep on learning, so they're easier and easier to play with. And, it's good fun down there at the moment.
We have Isaac coming here every fortnight, and he talked about just the benefits of not playing finals last year meant that he had a bit more of a longer break and freshened up physically and mentally. Your break was obviously longer because of the injury you had. Do you feel that it's benefited your footy looking back on it now?
Yeah. Oh, look, I hadn't really thought of it like that. I suppose I was lucky enough last year, even though I was injured, I got to go away mid-year and chase the sun and had a week where it was 30 degrees plus. So that was a great freshen up for me. But I suppose I'll feel the benefit maybe at the back end of career, because I am getting towards that back end of my career. So hopefully I'll reap the benefits now of missing probably a year and a half of footy at the back end.
How well does being in the leadership group sit with you, Strats? I know I've spoken to you about this personally, but it seems like it's been the... the spark that you've needed, particularly this year, for your football to go to the next level?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing that's helped my footy, and I didn't think of it that way probably 2 years ago, that the leadership could actually help my footy as well as other people's footy. So I sort of made a decision. Last year I was just ticking the boxes at the club. I wasn't really doing too much else, and I made a decision sort of that I am a leader now, and my teammates need me, as well as the coaches saying that you've got that potential. So, I sat down at the end of the year and concentrated on being as the best leader I could be, which was going to help my footy and also going to help the boys around me.
Robbie Gray, the champ from Port Adelaide, another showdown medal in his pocket after the weekend, and he's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Robbie.
Good morning, boys.
Have you got over it yet?
Got over it. It's a tough one. They're always tough ones, the showdowns. But, obviously, to be so close, and given how big a game it was for our year, it was pretty disappointing. But, yeah, we've moved on. We're now moving on to West Coast, and another big game, because they're all big now in the run home.
Talking about the showdown and its impact on the city and obviously the players as well. There was some unfortunate activity in the derby on the weekend with West Coast and Freo, and it's the crosstown rivals that seems to whip the fans up into a frenzy, whip the players into a frenzy. Is it the same with the showdown, you guys? And does it affect the players? Obviously the fans get involved, but does it affect the players?
Yeah, I think so. Like, there's a massive build up. Over here in SA in the week leading up to it, every time we play, no matter where we are on the ladder. So, they're always big games. You sort of always have a look at the start of the year and, circle those ones, because they're normally packed stadiums, and they're the ones you want to win. And the Crows have had the wood over us the last few years. So, the two this year in particular have been two of the best I've played in, both decided by less than a kick, and the fans get right into it, and they're very passionate over here.
Robbie, what's the record like after a showdown? Because I imagine there will be a bit of a sort of, you come down a little bit from the emotion of the whole week and the build up. What's Port's record like after a showdown?
Oh, I couldn't tell you, to be honest. I think earlier in the year we went over to China after the showdown, so that was a little bit different. But as for the overall record, I'm not too sure, but there's no time for us to waste now. We've got three games. We play West Coast, Collingwood and Essendon, which is three challenging games on the way home, and I think we're seventh on the ladder, so we all know how close the competition is, so no time to waste, and got to move on pretty quickly and prepare and get ourselves right for this weekend.
Did you have a chat to Ollie Wines after the game about technique potentially with that shot at goal?
Not so much. I mean, we just got around him, I suppose. That's been highlighted, I suppose, because it was towards the end of the game. But Ollie was pretty flat, as you can imagine. But he's one of our leaders. He'll learn from it. And move on. But I didn't mind the actual action. It was probably just more the execution. So he'll learn from it, and I'm sure he'll nail the next one.
So how often would you practice that at training? Every player now in the competition does that type of kick on that type of angle. Would you be taking 20, 50, 100 of those on a training track per week?
It depends on the individual, I suppose. But we do a fair bit of goal kicking. Forwards probably do a bit more of it, obviously, because we're at that end of the ground. But, we definitely practice those sort of shots. And, like I said, it's... we probably lost the game in other areas. It wasn't just that, but that's been highlighted. We got smashed in some other areas, and we'll probably lucky to be in it towards the end of the game there, given the inside 50 count and things like that. So, we'll take some positives out of it. The way we're able to get some scoreboard pressure on, which has, been a problem for us this year, putting the score on the board and finishing it work inside 50, but that was actually, pretty positive on the weekend.
Just one more on the tricks. I mean, you are so much fun to watch, especially this year. Some of the things you're doing on the field are awesome to watch. Is that stuff you practice, or is it more the instinctive stuff that you know you can do it, and it just sort of comes out, and that there are times where you go, gee, I can't believe I actually just did that in an AFL game. How does it happen for you in your mind?
It's definitely just instinct stuff, I think.
you know, you don't sort of practice it. The game throws really random things at you, and it is such a random game. You know, there's 44 players out there, so there's lots of different things happening. So, yeah, it's sort of just on instinct, and, yeah, some things, you know, happen sometimes. And, yeah, but I don't sort of practice for that sort of stuff. I practice simple stuff for training and, you know, goal kicking and things like that, but hands and all that sort of stuff. But in games, some other stuff comes out for everyone. It's just such a random game, as I said.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.